That was Basement Benders off of their new 7-inch. They're a newer band from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Asheville, North Carolina. That is off their new 7-inch, both released in the UK and the US on Drunken Sailor in the UK and Dead Broke in the US. That's members of lots of bands like Future Virgins, This Bike is a Pipe Bomb, Jack Palance Band, stuff like that. Anyway, whole record's good. That song was called Voices. Before that was a request by my friend Mike out in Providence. The song was Angels of Destruction by No Hope for the Kids. And before that was a request by another Mike, Mike Taylor, out in New York. It was Total Control with their song Meds, Part 2. Before that was a request by me, Natural Causes, off of their new LP. The song was called Cry Baby. It just came into the magazine recently. Their whole LP is really awesome. And starting off the set was RPA with their song Shoot the Pope. Earlier I said Kill the Pope, and gosh, my face is totally red. So embarrassed. Yes, it's called Shoot the Pope, off of their classic 7-inch. That song was requested by my friend Kyle, who I used to be roommates with and bandmates with. Now, the next set I'm going to do is sort of a continuation of the first song on the entire radio show, which was how we don't really pay a lot of attention to bands from the South around here. And I'm from the South, so I'm going to play a whole set of songs by bands from the South, mostly older bands from the 90s. Starting off is the band Jack Palance Band off of one of their old 7-inches. The song is called Dalton, Georgia, which is was a home to many of them. And I hope you enjoy.
I got a story about every street corner. Got a story about every street corner. Coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org, it is the July 30th, 2015 show of Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides. I'm him, Bathrobe Spear, and you're invited to call in 427-3772 if you have information or opinions on the issues of poor people in Santa Cruz and other civil rights issues that we regularly cover on this show and some that we don't. Stay tuned and have your phone ready.
We'll
Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. A little different theme music, though familiar to those who regularly listen to the show. That was Skidmark Bob and Just Kidding from 20 years ago in a song Down So Fucking Long It Looks Like Up to Me. And another song. What is it called? I guess it's called Homeless, and I don't know the singers. Sounds African, and reminds me of South African music, but not sure. On the other hand, it the theme is right, and I like the sound, so I play it every so often. So anyway, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm in the studio, hounded by my fellow broadcaster, Doc Mike, who is, as usual, bursting out at the wrong time with the wrong things. But he's a very well-intended guy and contributes to the show in spite of me. So we'll see how that goes. You, too, can contribute. Again, I try to cover stuff in Santa Cruz that other news media ignore or whitewash or aren't interested in at all, just because. Mostly around civil rights for poor people, but other stuff, too. Often around marijuana, police actions, lack of city council, transparency and accountability, things of that sort. So the most recent breaking news is a report from John Colby, via Pat Colby, who has been researching the background of the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services centers, failure to get grants this year that would have funded them to, continue the somewhat limited services they did provide to the broader homeless community. I'm not talking about shelter, which is only very token, and there is some shelter. There's the Pauley Loft, which you have to get on a waiting list to get into, or used, and you had to, you could, there were no prior requirements, I believe, prior to the shelter shutdown about a month ago due to the funding shortage. It used to be that, you know, you could sort of hanker around for the 46 beds for a couple months and get in there for a month. But then there were longer-term programs if you could meet their requirements. If you had an income, get into the Page Smith Community House. River Street, often it helped to have a mental condition or be disabled in some profound way or basic way. And Family Shelter, Rebelly Family Shelter is a Rebelly Family Shelter. But in terms of ordinary shelter for the average homeless person, single male or even single female, there's virtually nothing for 95% of the homeless. There is a small church program, you know, that deals with 20 people a night. And, you know, good for them and the 20 people they help with. But ain't much for the 1,500 to 2,000 total people out there. And particularly when you consider that they have a law that makes it illegal for them to sleep at night, hence our weekly community campouts or sleepouts at City Hall, which will be continuing this Sunday, coming up in 3 days or 3 nights. We'll be gathering at the post office and sootling along down the Pacific Avenue to the City Hall area, where we will probably have a light meal and then bed down and try to establish for the community a legal place to sleep. You might say, oh no, it's illegal on two counts. It's illegal because it's illegal to sleep after 11 on public property, period, and that certainly is public property, City Hall. And then due to a bizarre law that enabled the Parks and Rec director to ban people even being there after 10 o'clock at night, it's also illegal to be in that area after 10 o'clock at night, even if you're not sleeping, even if you're, I don't know, registering voters and so forth, which is what I'm going to be doing. I've got voter registration forms, and I'll be inviting the police to register for the vote and see if they want to attempt to remove me from the area. If I'm there and if that happens, you know, I always say I'm going to do this, and I have been there the last three sleepouts. I've gotten one citation on the second time the police ignored me and went after other people, and the third time they went after no one. Although First Alarm gave us a, we actually gave First Alarm a talking to, but in any case, that sounds like an incoming call. Let's listen in and see who's calling. Hello, you were on free radio. So try again, caller, if you want to call back and be on the air. The number here is 427-3772. Sorry if I didn't catch you quickly enough. But, you know, give me a minute, and I will at least four or five rings before you hang up, and I will get to you. So, the homeless lack of services center, as I call it, has even reduced its services further. Our on-the-scene observer, who may or may not be a resident there, I've not yet determined if that's the case, will give us his update shortly. But again, we seem to hear a ringing. Let's see if we can pick up on it. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Uncle Robert, this is David.
Hey there, David.
The other day somebody asked me, I think it may have been you at a meeting, just what is a Bernie Sanders home state doing with homeless people.
Yeah, I did.
And I thought, you know, before I go to any kind of Bernie Sanders support party, I think I should check that out. And I did.
Uh-huh.
And I was really shocked at how horrible Vermont is treating the homeless. They're defunding disabled for being homeless, and they have one of the most radically highest growing youth home on this living on the street, children living on the street of any state.
Really?
It's really, really awful. He wasn't governor of that state, but still, he needs to answer for it.
Well, perhaps a quick phone call to Bernie, and he can call the show and tell us what the story is, you know.
We'll see. Okay, thank you, Robert.
Hey, and thank you, David, for doing that research.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we had a Huff meeting yesterday. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Meet every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And one of the issues that came up was Bernie Sanders, Vermont Democratic Party senator, was throwing national, I don't know, shindigs all over the country, some of them in Santa Cruz. And Gail, one of our supporters, was, you know, enthused about Bernie, or seemed at least to be interested in mentioning him. And I, of course, did my usual wet blanket approach. And I said, you know, Bernie Sanders, Democratic Party hack, he'll talk all kinds of socialistic blah, blah, but he'll end up supporting whoever, you know, whatever Hillary Clinton-esque candidate comes rolling down the road on that side of the aisle. And, you know, it could be if people were militant enough, they might pull him off in another direction. But it's not the people who are really running the Sanders campaign, I would imagine. It's the fact that Sanders at least talks stuff that, and he doesn't seem as much of a hack professional politician, though he is a professional politician, and he is a longtime follower of the Democratic Party. Anyway, you know, so I asked David to look into. I asked anyone to look into it, and David looked into Bernie's position and actions in Vermont. And we did get one positive report from Vermont from Chris, another homeless activist, actually one of the few homeless activists we have at Huff. A lot of us are housed. And he said he had been to Vermont, and he was impressed with some of the shelter services there. And that's right on. And I said, okay, what about the laws that criminalize the homeless? And I guess I haven't heard anything more about that yet. David did mention, as just a moment ago, David Silva, who's also a Huff member and an activist, that he'd found that, they are cutting funds for the disabled and highest rising youth homelessness rate, if I heard him correctly. I may have gotten some of the details wrong. So the issue is really not... Is he better than Attila the Hun in the Democratic Party, Sanders? But what's he doing for the basic issues around homeless issues? That's at least that's my position here. People, of course, when they get to the voting booth, which is really a sort of plebiscite booth for whatever pseudo choices the establishment chooses to put in front of you rather than letting you make real choices, which you should do independently of them, of course. That's up to you who you're going to vote for, what you're going to do. But again, as I've said many times, your vote is not on November 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or whenever the Tuesday is. It's on today, it's tomorrow, it's the next day, it's whenever you take actions. That is your vote. That is more important than any little piece of paper you mark, in my view. So, I was also going to talk about, before we got into this, an email I got from John Colby, forwarded by Pat. John's been trying to figure out why the homeless lack of services center is now really going to lack services, because after its most recent cuts, as I understand it, it is completely excluding homeless people from meals, from showers, from bathrooms, from laundry services, from all the walk-in services they used to have, even if they weren't signed up for the programs and part of the fundraising, grant-grubbing processes that the homeless lack of services center likes to lump together as a sort of a pathway to housing. It seems to me singularly deceptive when there is very little housing available and it is primarily a pathway to employment for some people at the Homeless Lack of Services Center and for funding for the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I mean, I've tried to take a mixed position on the Homeless Lack of Services Center over the last few years, particularly earlier in the last decade or two, because, you know, they provided meals for homeless people at breakfast and dinner. They did provide a place to wash up. They did provide, laundry services, and they'd provide a mailroom. The mailroom is still there for a cost. And they used to provide storage lockers. But all that disappeared. As I've reminded people many a time, the Homeless Services Center, the Homeless Lack of Services Center, it began as free meal. That was what it was. It was a free meal funded by the city to drag away the activists and the homeless community from the town clock, where they were protesting the sleeping ordinances, police abuse, and selective enforcement. That was in 1988. They did this successfully, and they expanded the program as an attempt to, quite frankly, get the homeless people out of the downtown area. Now, of course, it never worked to their satisfaction, so they had to, you know, cook up a whole series of anti-homeless laws starting in 1994, the current incarnation of them. The sleeping ban is much older, and they have used other ordinances before that. But they began with these laws in 94. You can't sit down here. You can't peacefully spare change in a group of two. You can't hold up a sign after dark that says need work, need money. That's illegal. Not just in Pacific Avenue. It's illegal everywhere in Santa Cruz. It's clearly unconstitutional law. And I was actually reviewing some old videotapes of the 2006 city council meeting where two attorneys, Paul Sanford and Kate Wells, successfully challenged a part of that law. That was the law that had John Maurer, who was an activist with Community TV, and a homeless guy, and a former junkie. Who knows? Might be a current junkie for all I know. It doesn't make any difference to me. He's a person who had a sign on the street. He was trying to get some money for presumably survival purposes of different kinds. And he was harassed by Officer Pam Bechtel at that time, about 12 years ago. And in being harassed, he went up to go to the bathroom, and they confiscated his property. They gave him four different tickets. Finally, he put a little sign in his hat that said, "Fuck the pigs," parentheses, "police," end parentheses. At which point, they gave him two more tickets for obscene panhandling. Now, of course, he wasn't a panhandling by saying, "Fuck you, motherfucker, give me some money." He was saying, "This is my message about how the police are treating me. You may not like the way I put it, but it certainly has gotten me pissed. And I'm also looking for a spare change." He didn't say that. He was pretty silent. Actually, I don't know if he was silent or not, but no one ever accused him of verbally abusing anybody who walked by. Nonetheless, he was cited. And two attorneys took this case to court, and the city attorney, then John Barisoni, with the, no doubt the help of Tony Condotti, the new city attorney. Well, I don't know if he actually helped on this case, but he's part of their establishment, and I don't doubt these. I suspect he's carrying on the same practices. They spent thousands of dollars defending an ordinance that the federal judge finally said, "We're going to throw this one out." So they settled with the attorneys, and they changed this a part of the panhandling law that said in order for something to be regarded as abusive panhandling under this particular code section in terms of profane or abusive language, they threw out the word profane, and they added, what they did was they said it has to be directed specifically at individuals, and it has to be in some way, I think, aggressive and abusive. Now, if the entire ordinance were like this, I doubt I have any problem with the actual wording of the ordinance. But most of the panhandling ordinance is all about you're not allowed to be seated peacefully with a spare change sign anywhere on Pacific Avenue except inside certain limited boxes or it's not even clear if this is the case. It used to be 14 feet from almost everything you can imagine and during the day and not after dark, and only sitting alone. You can't have your child with you. You can't have your dog with you. It's clearly a discriminatory attempt to criminalize people and drive them away from the downtown, while at the same time saying, see, we're allowing panhandling. See, it's not illegal. And that's what Mike Rotkin, still a member of the Metro Transit Board, for all you people who think Rotkin has disappeared. He hasn't, I'm told. But he was then on the city council, and as who knows, maybe showing up again. But he and other council members, including Mayor Cynthia Matthews, who is now our mayor, I think. No, it's Don Lane. But she's in there and has been mayor twice. Sorry, I got a little muddled because I was thinking back to when she was mayor during this panhandling issue time. Anyway, the panhandling law was, they forced the law to change. And if we had attorneys nowadays who wanted to take the case, I suspect that the time, place, and manner loophole that the city uses to criminalize what is actually peaceful spare changing would be thrown out. But who can judge what the courts would do? In any case, we're working on throwing out the sleeping ban through a combination of processes. Direct action with the sleepouts at City Hall, one coming up this Sunday night. Lawsuit preparation, although that's been going on for quite a while, not specifically against the sleeping ban itself, but I've been gathering people's claims against the city for sleep deprivation. That hasn't gone anywhere, except that we've gotten claims rejected by the city. But it is still an option, and if people come forward and are interested in pursuing that option, I'm interested in assisting with it. There are also Steve Plaich of the Homeless Legal Persons Assistance Project, as he so grandiosely calls it, has claimed he and attorney Judy Berry are going to be suing on behalf of various homeless people who've had their property taken by rangers and cops and not returned. In some cases, destroyed. That's something that needs to be done. Anyway, there are various means, both legal and direct action, that are being used against laws that criminalize and harass homeless people. And also, Huff was talking yesterday about procedures to deal with those who like to bang on people's vans late at night, people whose only housing is a vehicle. And then, you know, it's like, open up and get out of here. We don't want you in our neighborhood or whatever. These are folks who don't seem to recognize the kind of the lowest common denominator of human decency. I mean, if we're talking about somebody who dumps sewage on the streets or craps in the sidewalk or is screaming at 3 in the morning or, I don't know, having a wild drunken party with, and, you know, inviting the children of the neighborhood in, that might be something else. But we're just talking about people trying to sleep in a private area in their own van. And these people, according to repeated reports that I'm getting, mostly secondhand, but some directly, are being harassed by the vigilante groups. Take Back Santa Cruz is a name that comes up, but, you know, I don't think very few people show their credentials and say, hi, I'm with Take Back Santa Cruz, and I'm going to harass you at night. You know, they just harass you at night. They don't say who they are, I suspect. But the objective is, what do we do rather than complain, groan, and meow about the whole thing? And the answer is, we document it. And I'm putting out a call to people who have vehicles and who have time. You don't have to be homeless to do this. I would suggest a person who is housed might be interested in doing this. There are certain areas of the city where it's legal to park at night, although these are becoming increasingly less as the permit parking gang at the Public Works, again, part of an anti-homeless drive, move to criminalize parking your vehicle between 1 and 6 in the morning without a permit. But there are numerous places where that's still allowed and where people are still harassed by neighborhoods who want to drive them away and somehow think they are privileged and entitled to drive them away. I'm asking people who are interested in fighting this to, if you have a vehicle or if you have a video camera or if you have time, any one of those three items, you don't have to have all three, just one of them. We want you to be in a van in one of those neighborhoods at night where we're finding this kind of practice seems to be happening. And then when the knock comes, you open your door and you start videoing the person who is doing the abuse. And you follow them up the street and you go to their car if they're in a car, or you follow them to their house. You don't enter their property, but you video exactly what they've done. And then you call the police or you call the media or you post this on IndieBay or on YouTube and you say, this is what's happening downtown, folks. And you find out who this person is and you post their name in public, you know, on the internet. So they learn that, yes, they can run around harassing other people, but it's going to be coming to the attention of the broader community. And if it is, then they will face whatever consequences are there. And I'm suggesting those consequences would be something like, what the hell are you doing to people who are powerless and have far less than you from others who know them? Although there might be, nice work, Joe, let's drive them all out of town. I mean, you know, it's possible. It's hard to say what the actual consequences would be for this kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm going to turn now to some street interviews after mentioning the important, really interesting information that John Colby has found by sending his inquiring repeatedly, and he was having some trouble doing this. He wanted to know why the HCD, which I guess is, what the hell is HCD? It's a government agency, Homeless Community Development, Housing and Community Development, maybe, who provides grants for groups like the Santa Cruz Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it, didn't give the grant this year, and they were $300,000 short. And after getting obstructed a bit, as he describes it, the questions he asks are, the Homeless Service Center, as he describes it, has responded to denial of the grants with differing stories about why they were denied. I refer you to the Santa Cruz Sentinel and the Santa Cruz Good Times magazine for these stories. Precisely what information was not provided by the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which he calls the Homeless Services Center. And the response is from where is it from? I'm looking, trying to find the Gerberding, Evan Gerberding, of presumably this state or federal agency that gives these grants. And he says, or she says, the HSC's applications did not score highly enough to meet the award criteria. There were several reasons for this. Calculations for determining household count was not provided. Points were deducted due to incorrect backup documentation. The HSC did not provide any outcome data as was required. Points were deducted due to several late annual performance reports. Data was provided in a format that was different from the required form. And then John Colby asked, what did they provide to HCD? And the response is, the HSC provided one application for rapid rehousing program funding and three applications for emergency solutions grant funding without sufficient backup documentation. The HSC responded to the HCD, that's the funding agency, by closing an array of programs far in excess in the denied grants. The HSC director has changed program eligibility to only applicants with a pathway to housing, denying services to a large number of disabled homeless people. And he asks a question about that, which I will get into in just a moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This
is yes.
Colby. Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about the email that I received from the State Department of Housing and Community Development about the denied grant award to the Homeless Service Center.
Yeah, I've been reading that and talking about it. Have you been listening to me, John, online?
Oh, no, I haven't. I haven't, no.
Yeah, no. Well, I've gotten as far as, you know, your question, why was there some problem in the grant that required, did the Housing and Community Development foresee that the homeless lack of services center's reaction of shutting down so many services and changing program eligibility? You know, why don't I have you summarize what you've learned from this document?
Well, okay, one is that the HSC was didn't do their due diligence in providing a lot of documentation that they were required to get that. Basically, well, first off, I should say that from what they said, this grant is highly, grants are highly competitive, that for every $2 applied for, only $1 is given out. So why would you try to fund core programs of your nonprofit with you know grants that you're unlikely to get most of or all of? That doesn't seem very smart. I mean, why didn't it come from a more stable? Why was the funding coming from a more stable funding source?
Do you know much about? Do you know much about the history?
What?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you know much about the history of the? The grant applications by the HSC over the last few years? In other words, have they always done this same kind of application, or is this something new, or were there other applications?
From my experience, when I was looking at the HSC about 4 years ago, and I was getting their sub-grants from the County of Santa Cruz, it seemed like I actually posted a document which showed the source of the HSC's funding from different sources, and it was something I got from the County of Santa Cruz, and it's on IndieBase somewhere. But if I remember, the amount that they got from the state of California, it was actually very small at the time. And from what I'm getting from this is that the funding from the HCD, the Housing Community Development Department, to the HSC just started in September 2011, because it says, and how much money was denied to the HSC by HCD and for how long? And they said, dating back to September 2011, HCD has awarded HSC a total of $930,000. HSC has applied for $2 million. So that means that they didn't start asking for money from the HCD until September 2011, which was after I got the documents about their budget and about their funding sources. So again, why would you go to a very competitive, long shot funding source for core programs? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it does look, John, like they, you know, they are getting, you know, they got half of what they requested. So maybe it's not as long shot as you would think.
Well, from what this is what this official said. She said that it's typical that this funding program is oversubscribed and we receive many more requests for funding than we make available. Historically, for every $2 that is requested, $1 is funded. So that's like 50%.
Right, so maybe the anticipation was they would only get 50%, but this year they got zilch, right?
Well, it sounds that even if they got 50% this year, they were going to have to cut programs if they didn't get... I mean, I only know once I get the documents and I can look them over, but it says right here that HSC has applied for... Well, it says it's... I mean, those are kind of loose numbers, but in any case...
Do we know if they've applied to other agencies for money and whether that, you know...
Right, they get a lot of money through the County of Santa Cruz through the Continuum of Care, what was used to be called the Continuum of Care.
And how much do they average get on the average? What, you know, do they get everything they ask for, and what percentage of their budget do they get from the...
You know, offhand, without looking at the document that I posted on IndieBay, I can't really answer that, but it seemed like most of, from what I do remember... About $1 million of what they received was through donations. They claim they got very little. They got a little bit from the city. They got a large chunk from the county. They got a small chunk from the state. So they got most of the grants. I got the impression that most of the grant awards were made through the County of Santa Cruz, because the county was applying for lots of grants.
So, you know, this has been a concern of mine and a suspicion of some other homeless activists that there has been a plan all along to do this pathway to housing, essentially cut off of funding to people who...
Basically change the eligibility requirements to deny a lot of people services.
And the point is, you know, that I'm not sure what percentage of the people applying this actually will still serve. I'm assuming it's less than 10%. But, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the amount of people that got shelter, and maybe they've got a bigger program of, well, I mean, actually, I think it's exactly the same amount of the people that they gave shelter to with the Paige Smith and the Paul Lee Loft, and maybe, you know, if you want
to
look
at... They have new eligibility requirements, it's pathway to housing.
Right, but even if they have new eligibility requirements, it's an extremely limited amount of services. I mean, I've never regarded those as being effective services in any meaningful way. For the average homeless person, but the meaningful services that have been there have been the meals, the showers, the laundry.
Those are the ones that affect the most people, are the day services of the meals and the showers, because now the majority of the population of homeless people in Santa Cruz have no way to take a shower, no bathroom to use, and also nowhere to get a meal.
Well, it's certainly cut back. I mean, there's the showers during weekdays at the Morris Street St. Francis Soup Kitchen at noon. There's...
But I'm saying in a substantial way, it's been substantially reduced.
It has been substantial. There are two bathrooms now, one the porta-potty, the Posner porta-potty at Laurel and Front, and the other at the open bathroom that's now 24 hours a day at the Soquel parking garage. I call it the peekaboo bathroom.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm trying to be, you know, very accurate. I don't want to be hyperbolic in what I say. I want to be very specific. Although, I mean, it's the statistics, the facts are bad enough. We don't have to embellish them. At least I don't. And I think that, you know.
And this isn't even talking about the lawsuit that they settled with Jeremy Miller and Dwayne Whitley for, we don't know how much money, because that information has basically been sealed by a motion by the Homeless Services Center, which the judge granted. So there's no way to find out from any of the parties to the lawsuit or from the judge or the court how much money they settled for.
Perhaps a midnight raid on the court records, John.
Well, yeah, I'll leave that to you.
Indeed. So, again, what we're talking about today, we're talking about John Colby, who's a longtime public records researcher on a number of subjects. Recently, a lot of homeless issues have been, you know, your preoccupation and concern, particularly around disabled people. What's the impact of the cutoff of services to disabled people? Are they more likely to be able to get into the small number of spots that are left? Or?
This I'm not sure of. Patricia, my sister, would know more, because she's talked to people who have been denied services. From what I understand, the pathway to housing eligibility requirement is that people who don't have a voucher, a Section 8 voucher, or don't have some kind of income are being denied denied access to these services. So that means if you don't have Social Supplemental Security income or SSDI or some sort of income of any sort, and you don't have a Section 8 voucher, that you're SOL on getting emergency housing because you have no supposed pathway to housing. They're only betting on people that they think that at some point they're going to be able to house.
Yeah, undoubted successes. But I mean, I'm wondering though. I mean, where does this come from? Do you have, or does Pat have documents that actually specify this?
Come from Patricia talking to people at the Homeless Service Center who complained about being denied, being told that
right.
they don't have a pathway to house.
Has anyone actually seen the written criteria, or that's what I'm looking for.
I try to request documents like that, but this is the problem with the Homeless Services Center. Even though they're a nonprofit, they're not open and transparent, they're not subject to freedom of information laws. So unless it's a document that they've shared with the city or the county, which I'm going to try to see what they have shared, there is no record of, like the lawsuit, you know, it didn't go through the city or county, and they didn't obviously inform them.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. Those are interesting lawsuits by Duane Whitley and Jeremy Miller. I actually talked to Miller briefly before he clamped down and said nothing, partially at my suggestion because he had a gag order on it. I didn't want him to lose his money, you know. I mean, I think the community could use the information he has.
Right, because we need to know what's wrong with these organizations.
Of course. But, you know, the issue for me also is we need really solid information, not anecdotal information, on what the actual requirements are. I mean, if it's ironclad true that you need to have specific funding sources to get into the programs, that seems to me to be a very simple question that can be posed over and over again to officials at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And it can also be posed in a very innocent and kind of not necessarily manipulative way by a person going in saying, you know, I have no income, I have no SSI, I have no, you know, is it worth my while to do any applying? And they might, you know, they might get a simple no, which would mean...
Well, actually, and I think, Robert, I want to also add that some of this information about the pathways to housing is coming from employees of the Homeless Service Center. They're not happy that people are being denied benefits there.
It'd be nice
some of it is actually from employees.
Well, if you can get these employees, who presumably are getting the information from somewhere else, to be very specific about what they're saying. Are they saying that they heard three people get denied? Are they saying they've seen...
Do you want to ask Patricia this? She would know more.
If she does, I don't want to embarrass her if she does not have that information now.
She's willing to talk to you about it.
Sure, okay.
Hi.
Hey, Pat Colby.
Hey, Robert North.
So you've probably been following this. Have you heard the conversation the two of us have been having? Or?
Well, basically, it's kind of discriminating. The worst case, people are gonna. You know,
My question to you, Pat, is where exactly are you getting the information? Not necessarily the people's names, but the specifics of, you know, does this come from, the guy or the employee who talked to you said, I regularly do intake on people and I have to tell them that as a categorical rule, we do not allow anyone, where do you get it from?
No, it's not the intake people. It's from people that are working there.
Working at what
job? That I talked to.
Working at what
job? Working at the HSC.
Working at what job at the HSC? What kind of job?
I didn't ask what kind of job.
In other words, I mean, you see, it's important. I mean, if it's somebody who's getting direct information because they're in the intake offices or they have seen intake happening, that's one thing. If it's somebody who has heard, you know, hey, there aren't...
I told this at the meeting.
Sorry?
By Jan and Thomas.
And what did Jan and Thomas, the director, say?
She said that it was going to rely on a pathway to housing.
But did she specify that there would be a required income source to apply? Did she say that specifically?
If they didn't have a voucher.
So she said, did she say you have to have a voucher or an income source to apply?
That is what I was told.
By who?
That she said at that meeting.
Okay, so you didn't hear her say it. You were told she was said it.
Yeah, because there was a whole meeting
Okay,
for all the employees.
You know, I mean, I think
it would
be, you know,
it was somebody from Food Not Bombs that worked.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, again, we're talking secondhand information. I mean, I guess what I need is, you know, I could do it myself. Is someone?
Well, I need
someone to write her. I don't want to talk to a secondhand source. I want to talk to someone. You know, I want her to say it, or somebody there you know, who will actually respond to it. Yeah, and I don't mind, you know, somebody saying, if they actually have a very clear recollection of exactly what was said, that's fine. But,
well,
I mean,
this person got it really well, but...
Well, yeah,
they
well...
They were upset that, because that would drop off a lot of the people they used to serve.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I know...
You have to understand, with Social Security, disability, they deny everyone right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Social Security. I'm talking about the homeless lack of services center. And
I know, but I'm saying they're requiring an income, or you have a voucher.
That was
clearly stated to me.
By a person who said he heard it from Jen and Thomas. Correct?
From the meeting that John and Thomas gave.
Correct. Okay, well, I'm looking to get real confirmation of this, and, you know, I'm not saying it isn't the case.
You should go find the people that were at the meeting. I'll point them out to you.
Right, or, it's very easy. You walk into the homeless service center, and you apply. And you see what they say.
Ahead.
Have somebody do that. Well, there are plenty of people, both of us know, Pat, who can go do that. It's not hard to do. You know, it's not that difficult. And no one's going to bite you if you do it.
Well, I think that's something Huff should do then.
I agree.
I'm not going to volunteer for any more jobs. I'm already...
I understand. I'm not asking you to. It's just when I get information, I want to make sure it's solid. I think that's one way we can find out.
Yeah, it's because it came from a meeting.
I understand. No, I follow that. So... Any other updates, Pat, that you have, either on the subject I've been talking with, you know, John about, which is this homeless community development response, which I'll go a little bit into as well. And anything else? I know you've been working on the recycling issue. You've been working on feeding people at the community camp out. You know, you've been doing a lot of stuff. Go ahead.
I did want to bring up something that we talked about at the Huff meeting. I told you there was a police officer that was sharing private details from police reports, which is, well, let me have John explain it to you. I didn't know the right wording.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, go ahead, John.
Right. I'm under different penal codes and various codes of the civil code. Police reports are only available usually to victims of crime, and otherwise they can only be obtained under subpoena. So there's a police officer in the Santa Cruz Police Department who's been giving out details from police reports, posting them on Take Back Santa Cruz Facebook group, and so he's been posting the number of the report and the details of the police report, and he did this.
What kind of police reports are we talking about?
Criminal reports.
What kind of crimes are we talking about?
I don't know. I didn't read these things closely. I just saw Pat was going through them and reading them, and
That would interest me. See, it seems to me that the police department probably has discretion.
They're to protect the not only the suspect, but also to protect, you know, the victims and other people. There's penal code, Robert.
I'm right here, and what are you quoting from?
I'm saying there's penal code.
What are you quoting from? John? What are you quoting from specifically, please?
You haven't got it with you.
I know what they tell us when we go in and try to get these police records. They say, what they tell me is we have broad discretion in giving these out. If you're a reporter, you got more options and so forth. But to me, as far as I know, wait.
Whether you're a reporter or you're a person.
Hey, hang on, John. Hang on. The point is that what they claim about broad discretion means that a police officer, if he wants, can reveal a lot of information if he chooses to do so. That is to say, now if you can cite me cases where police officers have been disciplined or sanctioned anywhere, or there's a specific code that allows for that. That'll be great.
Google penal code police report. You'll if you start doing a little Googling for the penal codes which apply to applying the police reports, you'll see that, you know, what I'm saying is accurate.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the time to do the research for you right now.
Okie dokie.
I can tell you that I believe very strongly that this officer is violating the law.
I know you do. I know you do. And, you know, I'm not saying your strong belief is wrong, but I'm always looking for the documentation behind the belief. Because I've had,
look for it, Robert.
I am. And I have, and that's why I'm talking to you, John. You're the one who's presenting the information, and I'm the one who's asking you the questions about it. Okay. That's the reason I do this. And I also
What you can do, Robert?
Go ahead, John.
You can also do, you can do a public records request to the FCPD and ask what the requirements are for releasing information.
That's not, see, you're missing my point. The issue is not what the requirements are. The issue is there anything that prevents officers themselves from revealing it? That is different. That's much different.
That would be a better way to word it.
You understand. See, I think you may be mistaking one for the other. I know they can play a lot of games with stuff, saying, oh, you know, we got the discretion for this and discretion for that. But I also suspect, and I do not know, that they can themselves release all kinds of information that they would prefer not to give you unless they want to. That's one of the unfortunate and inappropriate powers that the police department has.
I understand that.
And that's why I'm asking you, when you say something like that's illegal and we suddenly hear the panic rising, I don't want to jump on the hysteria bandwagon, but I do agree with you that that's wrong. I agree with you that's a matter of concern. I agree that Ken Deeg, who is behind a lot of the harassment attempts of the public works to institute 24-hour parking around, you know, the homeless service, lack of services center area, and who knows where that is right now. You know,
well,
that
this is something that I will be looking into further, the legal aspect.
Right.
Because I plan to take it to the city council and ask that Ken Deeg be reprimanded.
Right,
and also that possibly be fired or he be prosecuted if it rises to the level of a prosecutable offense.
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, I'm a man who likes to see this police department respond to the Constitution. Even the law doesn't even do much good since the cops write the laws or get the legislators to write the laws the way they want them. But the Constitution, in theory, is a protection, and even if the Constitution is a theory, basic human decency should be the other guide that we have here. So.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to continue. Is there more on the homeless housing and community development memo or email correspondence you have that you want to talk about? This is let me just say this, John. We're talking with John Colby here at Free Radio at 101.3 FM. When you can call in, if you've got a question for John, at 427-3772, 427-3772. I've been peppering this, you know, hardworking researcher, and you are a hardworking researcher, John. Let's not forget that. I mean, I know that. And you know, however much I try to, you know, pin you down here and there, the point is not to discredit what you're doing, but to try to really get to the specifics as much as I can. So
can I quote basically the point of what the reasons were for denying the application?
Sure. And we're talking about the
One was there were several reasons for this. Ms. Evan Gerberding, she's the executive director for external affairs at HCD. Several reasons for this, they did not score highly enough to meet the award criteria. Correct calculations for determining household count was not provided. Points were deducted due to incorrect backup documentation, so they're basically saying you can substantiate with something you were claiming. HSC did not provide any outcome data as was required, which is basically saying that you aren't providing any information about how successful your program has been. Points were deducted due to several late annual performance reports, so they weren't doing their due diligence in filing these annual performance reports, and data was provided in a format that was different than the required format.
Question I would have about that, and I actually read those things earlier, but they bear repeating, is was this a problem the year before? Do we know that?
As far as I know, not. Because they were awarded the grant, and
do you think that was because the standards of the granting agency had gotten tighter?
No, I have a suspicion why this is because last year the grant, I believe the person who wrote the grant application was Monica Martinez, and this year it was Shelley McKittrick. Last year Monica Martinez applied for two ESG grants, and this year our 2HCD grants, and this year Shelley McKittrick applied for 4, which is kind of, you know, questionable. Why are you suddenly applying for 2 more grants and how much more money than you applied for the year before from the same funding source?
And do we know that the grants requested last year gave half as much money, or at least they requested half as much money?
No, I don't know. I haven't got that information.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Monica Martinez is, you know, a grant writer extraordinaire. She certainly has a friendly smile. I'm afraid I'm very hostile toward poor Monica.
Well,
but
one of the people that I think Patricia spoke to, or that I spoke to, I think about Shelley McKittrick, claimed that she was completely incompetent. So that might.
You mean Monica Martinez or Monica Martinez or
Shelley McKittrick?
Right.
Shelley McKittrick is not a favored person by many employees of the Homeless Service Center. And clients do not like.
Well, that's interesting. If that's the case, I mean, I know I've heard a lot of criticism about Shelley McKittrick from Andy Carcero, who's a homeless resident now in the Pauley Loft, but who's disabled, and who was in the Page Smith Community House and has been writing angrily demanding better treatment for himself and other people there. He doesn't think much of her, and he's upset with her behavior. And she's actually, first she won't write him anything back, then she's sort of responding to his stuff. So I'm glad that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. In the studio with me is homeless activist Doc Mike. Mike, you have some thoughts? A question, perhaps?
Just 2 things on my mind. One is I know some of the staff there, some of the more intelligent staff, and they say a lot of this trouble started with Martinez, the former director. And secondly, you were arguing a while ago about whether what are the criterion for getting into the loft and the other programs. Obviously, a path to housing is their top priority. I heard Shelley McKittrick say that to an audience, and so you can't have a path to housing unless you have some kind of an income, or or you have a voucher or a Section 8. So what they were saying, what John and Pat were saying, is essentially true as far as I'm concerned.
Right. What meeting did you go to, Mike?
That was a meeting that was held by, before they closed the Pauley Loft down, that was a meeting that was held by Sherry McClintock, if that's her name.
You mean Shelley McKittridge?
Yeah, no, McKittridge, sure. Yes. So I was at that meeting. That was addressed to all the inmates of the place.
But did she say, again I ask you, as I asked John, did she say specifically, you will need to have SSI, SSDI, or a voucher?
No, she did say you will need to have access to housing, to the pathway of housing.
But she didn't.
Nobody has access to housing.
Wait, no. She didn't specify what she meant by that, did she? Or did
no,
she?
But I can tell you, nobody has housing unless they have a voucher or Section 8.
No, I don't agree with that. You could have some promise of something in the future.
No,
I don't know.
I'm telling you what the facts are.
Generally, I would agree with Mike.
No, you're telling me your interpretation of the facts, Mike.
What I'm saying is,
go ahead, John.
Speak up, John.
The point is that what Robert is making is that we don't have someone defining. But Robert, it hasn't been these employees who complained. Patricia basically told her what the pathway to housing was. It was Section 8 voucher or an income.
And who said this?
So they knew from them listening to the new director.
So a specific employee told Pat or you that required those specific
told
things.
Pat, yeah.
Okay, she hasn't said that before. I'm surprised that suddenly it pops out now, but, you know, okay. It seems to me if that's the case...
Now, is this true that an employee told you that the pathway to housing was a Section 8 voucher or an income? Yes, it is true. Pat says it's true.
And only those 2 things?
Yeah. Well, I don't know only, you know, you'd have to speak in more detail to her, but basically that...
Yeah, okay. It seems to me, again, as I said, this is not, you know, rocket science. We don't need to really speculate about it. We can find out more specifically.
But I can explain why they would do this, Robert. Basically, if they haven't been showing good outcomes, what better way to gain the outcome for future grant requests than to make sure that the people that you give services to are ones that are definitely going to get housed because they already have the resources to get housed. So you would basically discriminate against people who are at a low likelihood to be permanently housed because you don't provide those resources because they already have other resources of their own that they're going to get housed eventually.
That's what they call, it is true that that could be the case. It is not necessary that that is the case. That's the point.
No, it isn't necessary, but I'm saying that would make sense.
Of course, it does make sense.
You know,
and there are different theories that, some call them conspiracy theories or theories about, you know,
I'm not saying there's a conspiracy to do this.
I would call it a rational conspiracy. You know, it's particularly if it's not being widely talked about. I think if they're
if they're going to
cut off a bunch of people, the majority of the homeless population from basic services in order to get themselves grants, yes, I would call that
exactly
a conspiracy. However, you know, to assert it is not to prove it. That's the point. That's always the point. And that's my problem with a lot of these assertions that I hear floating around. But, you know, you and Mike and Pat could well be correct, and I'm not saying you aren't. I'm just, you know, the more evidence I get, the better.
And this is another point.
Yeah.
Why wasn't all this information that this person at HCD given me, why wasn't it ever given? Did we ever hear it coming out of the mouth of city or county officials?
Speaking,
or Dan and Thomas, for that matter.
You know, I actually heard this information you got in this email a couple weeks ago, by the way. These four specific reasons why their grant was denied.
Oh, really? Because what's been reported in the Sentinel and the Good Times are Jan and Thomas's stories keep changing, and she didn't hit all these points.
Well, it could be that, you know, that she hit some of them, or somebody else hit some of them. Yeah, I'm glad we have them, and I think it's. I appreciate you bringing them up. And you know, your concerns are, you know, right on. I hope that, you know, that we can, you know, document them more thoroughly, and then put out specific information to the broader community that actually pins them down, and that's. What I want to see happen. So,
yeah.
Anything else that you want to bring up?
I know that covers everything I had to talk about.
And does anything Pat wants to say about anything else coming up?
Is there anything you want to say, Pat? No,
there's. Okie doke. Well, thank you both, and get a radio and listen in, or listen on your computer, and then call in and denounce what you know, or let us know what's going on. So.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, man.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye, Robert.
So if anyone else has any thoughts on this, did you apply to the Homeless Lack of Services Center programs and were told, no, you got to have a voucher, you got to have Section 8, you got to have SSDI, or you have to have a pathway to housing, and that means one of those three things, please call in and let me know. If you don't want to let me know on air because you're a little nervous about being public, call me off air at 423-4833. I'll keep it private. Or if you see Doc Mike, and some of you may know Doc Mike, talk to him about it and tell him what's going on. And Mike, I know that you you have your ear to the ground at the Homeless Lack of Service Center. Maybe you can find out more information about that.
I will.
Good enough. So let's go musical, and I'll be right back. Actually get to some of the audio that I've been collecting over the last week. We did do a sleep out last Sunday, and we'll be doing another one this Sunday. I did some interviews. I want to play some of the interviews. I'm looking at if I see more on this email from John that I think I want to put out, I will definitely do so. And thanks to him and Pat for coming forward with this information for further research on this issue. Thanks.
Homeless, moonlight sleeping on a midnight lake.
Homeless,
we are.
by sleeping on a midnight lake. They'll be a homeless, homeless, homeless. Boom, 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 moonlight sleeping on a midnight lake.
And now something from the streets.
Pacific Avenue, it's about 15 to 10, the day after Dreamcatcher's mom's birthing day. Dreamcatcher is getting a guitar in honor of his mother's good work. What does your mom get out of all this, Dreamcatcher?
She gets to find out that I turned out as good as she expected me to be. I wish I could tell her that.
Well, perhaps you are.
Well, I think so. I was given the 51% chance that the airwaves are open.
Odds are much higher than that. We're never going to argue.
We have an argument coming up here on the street.
Now we're going to argue.
You know, I heard this song today, actually. I know your name because I came from outer space. I heard that song today. The reason why I know your name is because I came from... But anyway, I'm here with Robert Norse, and I'd like to give my biography today, but, that's not appropriate. So, happy birthday to me and to my brother Jeff, my twin brother Jeff down in San Diego. And I haven't checked in a while, and they go.
Let's ask your associate what she thinks of you. Should this man...
He said your sticker is wrong. They only call it race warfare when we fight back. Because it's always a class warfare. I just think they only call it a race warfare when we fight back.
I have to think about that.
Or race warfare.
And we're talking with...
I like your sticker, though.
Yo-yo.
Should I call you Yo-Yo?
Yeah.
Here. Yo-Yo. How long have you known the infamous Dreamcatcher?
A few years. Or all our lives. It just depends which way you look at it.
Well, you tell me.
According to his 51%.
I know nothing.
I know that.
Any reports from the street, you guys?
I just came out tonight, and I'm home babysitting my grandson, so I'm not out as much. You know.
catch or anything from you?
Yes, well, I have lots. Let me take one more hit. There's my enemy on the wall over there.
I don't know. Sharps box in front of the courthouse.
It has been for a while.
I just noticed it. I never noticed it before.
There's so few Sharps containers around town.
I don't have a problem with the Sharps box necessarily. It's just its placement. Just put it wherever, like, it's actually going to be used.
They sit up under the bridge.
Then put it under the bridge, duh. You know? I mean, come on. That's my point. I'm not saying I believe in exchange. I believe in, like, that's my point. You know? Pardon the pun.
Well, are you saying that people will not bother to put it?
Hey, give my letter.
She'll be back. He'll be back.
I know.
We'll be right back.
But no, that's my point. Pardon the pun. That's what I mean.
No problem.
They're not going to want to record. Nobody's going to, like, you know? That's why if I'm smoking on filter now, but when I used to smoke the filter, I'd either have to keep it on me. Unless I want to take the time to walk across the street to the track.
Interesting.
When a monkey's on your back, you're not freaking gonna very few. Once you get to a certain stage or whatever, you can only hold on to so many things.
Thank you, Yo-Yo.
Put it where, you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. Thank you, babe. Now here's some music from the Magical Three here.
Lopez and
Christone.
Alfred E. Newman.
And
Morgan.
Thank you.
Alfred E.
With
Newman.
Yo-Yo in the background.
Yep, and Yo-Yo Black.
Any street reports?
Pardon me?
So,
you know, just the usual silly things. As a matter of fact, yeah, most of the time it's just the sillier of the people out here that are well, there are silly people out here that freak out a little bit too much over nothing.
Thank you.
Nothing.
I'd ask you more, but I got a good man back by Jim.
Go.
And that was Dreamcatcher's mom's birthing day of, almost a week ago now, actually more than a week ago. Let's hear more from, I think we're talking a couple days later.
So I'm talking with Drew Glover.
Drew Glover.
You're a man.
Oh, boy.
Some of this food tickles the throat.
Does garbanzo beans.
Something like that.
No, he's not choking me to death. That's the food on the table here at Gale's. But, Drew, you're working to forward a number of projects. One of them has to do with the beach flats. Attempted to destroy the garden down there by the Seaside Company?
Develop the garden, yeah.
Right, yeah.
We saw the Sentinel ad or the Sentinel article that was done for the Sentinel Spotlight about the Beach Flats Garden and the Seaside Company's intent to reacquire the land from the existing lease and develop it into a park, relegating the community garden aspect of it into a small corner, which would downsize it dramatically and take away a vital community resource for it.
How much? What would the shrinkage be?
I don't have the exact square footage, but it would be a much...
One quarter, one fifth?
I don't have the exact measurement. However, it would be a much smaller version of it, since the entire plot of land, except for the amount that was relegated for the community garden, would be left. So no matter what, you're having a downsize of the overall.
Is there a deadline for the Seaside Company's action? Are they? What's their master plan?
So our initial meeting is Sunday, the 26th at 1 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. We're going to be talking with some freedom sleepers. We're going to be talking to some existing activists that already have operated in the Beach Flats community and make it so we can understand the situation that's going on down there immediately, because the Sentinel ad, unfortunately, didn't have a lot of information as to the timeline of the Seaside Company.
You were having a meeting, but do you know what the Seaside Company's plans are in terms of any timeline?
Not yet, because we decided probably like about four or five days ago to build the coalition. Upon my initiation, I contacted a few individuals that I had seen were concerned about the issue and suggested that we get together and do it. So since then, we have set the meeting at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. We have some really awesome people reaching out to some...
Who are the heavies in this coalition?
Well, the core is myself, the director of Project Pollinate, Irene O'Connell from the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and the and El Siete, or Chris, who is a part of the Legendary Collective at the Museum of Art, the Tannery, as well as the Kennedy House, which is the old Resource Center for Nonviolence. And we're reaching out to some of the pre-existing Beach Flats activists like Reina Ruiz to see her opinion about it. Also, Mauricio Cruz, who is the person that's on the lease of the actual space and land. And so reaching out to them, and then also community members, other organizations and individuals that have experience within the Beach Flats Garden.
What do you think it would be some of the strategies you're going to be suggesting at your first meeting?
Well, Project Pollinate has developed a three-part plan to address the issue, and so we'll be introducing that to the coalition when we get together. The first part is surveying and data acquisition, which involves surveying and canvassing of the local neighborhoods to get the opinion, as well as doing ethnographic interviews to obtain the opinions while holding listening sessions.
Assassinating officials of the Seaside Company is so far not on the table.
Not on the table at all. No, we would rather have a
hostile buyout is not on the table.
No, we'd rather have an amicable agreement with the Seaside Company and make it real for them to understand the humanizing aspect of allowing the garden to continue. So there's that with the initial data acquisition and analysis. Then from that data acquisition analysis comes the second part, which is the community education aspect of it.
Roller coasters lives matter.
Roller coaster lives. People on roller coasters lives do matter.
I mean the roller coaster itself. We have to consider the equipment. Save the equipment.
I don't consider entertaining equipment or corporations people. So, yeah, I know.
You're such a bigot.
I know. I am definitely bigoted against corporations and not so much carnival rides because they haven't done anything to me, but, you know, in general.
Have they ever done anything for you is the question.
They have provided me with lots of entertainment from the ages of 5 to 18.
You're outgrown?
I don't think I've been on a boardwalk ride since I was 18, so I don't know.
Were you around this area when you were a youth?
I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. I was born over on Frederick Street, the old Dominican, and then grew up from 32nd Avenue out to Aptos, over to Paso Tiempo, and then back down into Midtown.
Date of birth?
11-15-85, so I'm 29 now. I turned 30 in November.
Now, as an individual who's been a part of the community for a long time, we've heard rumors of racial profiling and hostility and discrimination. Surely there's nothing like that happening in Santa Cruz.
Unfortunately, I cannot agree with that statement, and there's lots of that going on in Santa Cruz. You know, especially when dealing with the issue of Deputy Chief Steve Clark. If you go and research the Good Times ad and just search my name and Good Times in Google, you'll find an article done by John Malkin.
I saw it.
Yeah, kind of outlining.
You cut me out of the article, I would like to point out. It's not part of your scram coalition.
Unjust World, and it's not my scram coalition.
Certainly not.
Yeah, no, just a participant.
Yeah.
But the examples given in that article, as well as just all of the accounts of abuse from police officers in positions of power, definitely go to support the concept that there is racial profiling and oppression within the Santa Cruz community by police officers. And from what I understand, there's a lot of oppression all around.
specific?
Not name names and not going to name anything specific, but there's a lot in store. I'm working with another coalition separately from that to deal with the issue.
What coalition is called?
We don't have a name.
The coalition without a name.
The coalition without a name, because real coalitions don't need names. They need people.
Indeed. And how can people join this, keeping an eye on racial profiling, discrimination, et cetera?
If you're interested in joining coalitions surrounding the issue of solitary confinement, if you're interested in joining coalitions around the issues of police brutality, the closure of the Beach Flats Garden, or just overall human rights abuses in Santa Cruz with the homeless situation, sleeping bans, all that kind of stuff, I highly encourage anyone that's interested in learning more about those issues or becoming involved to contact us at Project Pollinate. You can reach us directly on our website through our contact page at projectpollinate.org, or you can send me an email directly at Drew, spelled D-R-U, at projectpollinate.org.
Now, will you be hefting your sleeping bag to join the mighty but small, or perhaps mighty small, group of individuals who will be sleeping at City Hall tomorrow night?
Now, that's one thing I'm really surprised about, is that with all of the stuff that's been going on and all of the work that Project Pollinate is doing, I'm really surprised that no one within that group has reached out to have us involved or invite us to
participate. Let's reach out.
Absolutely.
Someone had like a month and a half ago.
No, no, not at all. We got invitations via Facebook and everything, but you know, that's kind of a general thing. We'd like to be involved with helping to structure things, because there's a lot. I mean, while we are totally in support of the homeless issue, there's been a lot of conflict amongst the decision makers, and it would be great to be welcomed in and invited in to participate, even if not helping to coordinate things, be involved in and aware of the decision
makers. Grab a sleeping bag and join us tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. Okay, wonderful.
Or just join us for a mid-evening meal. Or
yeah, well, you know what? I will definitely be there tomorrow night.
Oh, really? Okay, well, you'll be welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we've been talking with
Drew Glover, the executive director and founder of Project Pollinate.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
And that was an interview at Gadabout Gale's house with Project Pollinate director Drew Glover, as you just heard. I think he did show up, at least for the march. I don't think he hefted a sleeping bag last Sunday. I'm going to try to encourage him or others to come to the meeting of the working group that's going to be putting the final touches on the latest sleep out on Sunday night, that again will start at the post office at probably around 6:30 or 7. Wander on up Pacific Avenue. We did quite a trek this last time. And then end up at City Hall with sleeping bags and pillows. And I think we're going to be wearing it's going to be a pajama parade, too. I hope to have my mega teddy bear with me. Usually I carry Edwina, my police bear, in my bathrobe. But I'm going to have his elder, bigger, much bigger brother, and who knows, other surprises. So come on to the pajama party, sleep out, parade, protest against the sleeping ban. That's going to be Sunday, starting at the Food Now Bombs meal or thereafter, and going to City Hall. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I had hoped to get an update on the marijuana cultivation situation. You may remember that the restrictive no commercial cultivation and very little patient cultivation of any size in Santa Cruz County ordinance passed by the Board of Supervisors was dumped in a referendum, or at least put on hold is the way to put it. And the supervisors are going to be coming up with some proposal next Tuesday. I'd hope to get Pat Mallow in the studio. I've tried to set pit dog Becky Johnson on Pat, see what she can find out. And so far, I haven't heard anything from any of them, but I'm going to keep hoping and keep trying. But I did catch this interview with a marijuana activist, again, shortly after I spoke with Drew Glover.
Talking with
Mike Jolson, a proponent for the California Hemp Initiative.
Now, Mike, there are a number of initiatives floating around the toilet bowl. What's the story with those initiatives?
Well, the story is that a lot of them are just filed and they don't have any traction. So the one to watch is the one that hasn't filed yet, which is the California Cannabis Policy Reform. They're the most, they have the most chance of raising.
The most corporate, perhaps?
Yeah, the most corporate. And they're going to release their wording in the next few weeks for us to really see their plan for corporate legalization.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Pessimistic. I feel they're going to attempt to instill the Colorado model of a six-plant, one-ounce initiative, leave the prisoners in jail, highly regulated, and overtax it based on the myth that Californians need to conform or compromise when we don't. We
want to reassure the great center.
Yep.
Yeah. So there are other initiatives circulating around as well?
Well, no, none of them have actually hit the street. There's one called the MCLR, and they're refiling because they don't have any traction. So there's none that I know of that are actually on the street. They're all just mostly smoking mirrors trying to get George Soros' money, and they're not going to get it that easy. So we're the California Hemp Initiative. We're going to file August 25th. Expect to hit the streets in late October, about October 28th. We'll be hitting the streets.
You'll be contributing $10 to
your legislation.
Excuse me?
Is anything going to be, you got funding for that or not?
No, we're trying to find funding. And this is the typical struggle of a grassroots movement without the funding. We're trying to find funding, small and large donations, and we have a few different strategies. I'm trying to get pledge drives, trying to get solid donors, and we feel that as soon as the CCPR people file, at least people can make their decision. Do they want a highly regulatory Colorado structure, or do they want the Jack Herer model of laissez-faire regulation, but like beer and wine, heavy liberal emphasis on personal use?
Has the Herer model ever actually made the ballot?
We've never made the ballot in California. I believe it might have made the ballot in Alaska, but no, it's never made the ballot, and they don't want it to. The big money does not, George Soros, MPP, these people that want to corporatize it do not want to see Jack Herer's initiative on the ballot because they know it can win. Full legalization in California can win, and we don't want this out-of-state garbage they're going to try to shove down our throat.
Now, locally, there has been a successful referendum on the Board of Supervisors restricting cannabis cultivation. Any response to that? Before I ask you that question, you asked a question, which was, what's the substance of your proposal that distinguishes it from the corporate proposal?
Well, our proposal is 12 pounds for personal use, so that means for 12 pounds for personal use and 99 female flowering plants, what they're going to propose is 1 ounce or 2 ounces and 6 plants, and you probably will go to jail if you have more. So we're proposing 99 female flowering plants, and we're proposing for personal use, and that we're proposing for cannabis to be legalized, the commercial sales, just like beer and wine. So there'll be cannabis bars, there'll be hash bars, it'll be legal and no more heavily regulated than beer and wine. And our entry fee is $1,000 to enter into the commercial business, whereas their entry fee is going to be a lot bigger.
Now, what about the prisoners that are in jail?
Our initiative, we're the only initiative that's going to attempt to free all 1,500 nonviolent cannabis prisoners. So we free the nonviolent prisoners with our initiative.
So what about the local cannabis cultivation situation?
Well, the local, because of the different grassroots groups, funding occurred and, they stopped the referendum. So I think there's a movement between the government, the Santa Cruz government, and people, activists, to attempt to find some type of medium ground. And that's all kind of in the back behind closed doors. So it's not that transparent. government at the moment, but the city, the county knows that their ordinance didn't work, so they kind of got handed their lunch, so to speak. So I think there is a movement, and I definitely support the Cannabis Advocates Alliance. They're the most transparent group to actually, get the pulse of what's going on, the CAA.
Do we know what their proposal is?
Not yet.
Not that transparent.
Well, no, it's
not completely formulated at this point.
Well, the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, they have written proposals and they force us sensible, cannabis cultivation. However, the city government or this county government, it's all in behind closed doors at the moment. But I think the main point is they realize the model, doesn't work. And so at least
what model doesn't work?
The model that they were, well, the ordinance, through political brute force, their ordinance was stopped. So now the county realizes they better listen to this group of
the
cannabis.
It was stopped, essentially banned cannabis cultivation except for very small cultivated.
I read that in the.
Yep.
Zero commercial cultivation in
Santa. And they did that in attempt to, as a knee-jerk reaction to probably some very real complaints from neighbors, but because, again, that they underestimated the power of this cannabis army, that money was raised, and now the ordinance was stopped. So I think they woke up to the fact that this cannabis, community is not apolitical. They are political, and they can mobilize votes, and I think that is what the Board of Supervisors realized.
And what about these complaints? I mean, I understand, the smell was too strong, in other words, I have yet to see any really well-defined stats about real concerns, more just anecdotal concerns. What was your experience?
I agree. I think that the complaints might be, of course, they're complaint-driven, lights from greenhouses, noises, fans, generators, and
that's a noise complaint. You don't need to do with any business, right?
Right. But I think that, I'm sure some of the neighbors have some legitimate complaints, but the overall problem is the prohibition, because these medical farms, as great as they are mostly profit-driven, and so as long as the prohibition of medical marijuana, it's a profit-driven industry, so it's bound to create people from other states coming out here, blowing up the mountains, and they're ruining it from other people, these people that are trying to grow way bigger than, from other states.
You have stats on this, or this is just your impression?
Well, that's through personal experience and through some of the stats that the Board of Supervisors has, but there have been, grows that have gone a little too, overboard in and the drought is but the new form of enforcement now is with the whole bringing the county and the Bureau of Land Management, all the environmental angles are they're starting to bring in, and now some of it's justified and others is probably not. In other words, some of it they're making up. They're saying that people are diverting water when they aren't. But the overall premise, though, is that, as we all know, prohibition is the problem. And so that's driving a profit-driven
market. What's the status of marijuana prisoners in Santa Cruz County?
In Santa Cruz, I think there's 1,500 statewide. In Santa Cruz, I'm not sure on that. But that's a great
expect a full report next time I talk to you.
Okay, yeah.
Mr. Marijuana Man.
We'd love to hear these numbers.
Okay.
Very important.
And we've been talking with
Mike Jolson from the California Hemp Initiative, CCHI 2016.
How can you get in touch? How can we get in touch with you?
Okay, they can, my email, through email, and if you go to the CCHI website, CCHI2016.org, on the contact section, you'll see me there.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And thank you, sir.
Caleb.
Wilbur Red Eyes, son of Nuggins. Thank you.
I just wrote it. Oh, that wasn't it. I gave you the right part. Sorry.
And that was kind of an update. I'm still looking for a more comprehensive and specific update. You know, I mean, how many marijuana prisoners have we got? How much marijuana has grown in the county? What is the need for marijuana in terms of number of people who are looking for it, in terms of anybody who's done a survey or estimates it? Where is marijuana available for low-income people and under what circumstances from all these wonderfully politically powerful dispensaries have gotten together to, I think, I'm glad they have, challenge the latest bigoted county cultivation law, which I don't think is, you know, you can talk about a lot of so-called legitimate concerns, but they are mingled with illegitimate concerns to have to do with the general paranoia about marijuana growth. And I... I think that has to be considered a heavy factor in this whole situation, particularly when we have ex-cops like Zach Friend on the board and cop-friendly lawyers like Ryan Coonerty. So now it's time for some more on-the-street interviews or possibly your phone calls. I just got a call from a caller who wants to be a guest on the air. I've told her give a call back, and if you are interested in being a guest on Free Radio on this show, give me a call on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And my phone, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Call me, and I will get back to you. And, you know, you're likely to go on the air if you've got stuff that's in the same general vicinity as what I'm talking about. Now we're going to turn to the, I think it's the night of the actual sleep out a week ago, almost actually 4 days ago, 5 days ago. I'll play a little of that now, and hey, maybe that will inspire you to wander on down to the sleep out on Sunday where you can sport a bathrobe and we can show off our bathrobes to each other. Maybe what's under the bathrobes. You never can tell.
Well, here we have a new face with her own music stand and her own flute or something, recorder.
Recorder? Yes. Yes, my old.
What, your name is?
I'm Val. You're Pal Val.
You're my Pal Val.
Val, yes.
So you're bringing a note of Christian charity to this atheist march?
Well, yes, just trying to love with the love of Jesus. No preaching. We don't preach. We just love. We try to love with the love of Jesus. No throat cramming. We just love and play music to the glory of God.
So how long have you been doing this afternoon?
Oh, golly. A couple hours.
Seen anything interesting?
Well, yes, I see the shower that was set up.
It's actually happening over there right next to the post office.
Yes.
Makeshift shower inside a tent. There's a man coming out of it who's putting on his shirt, having a shower down.
Yes. Thank God somebody took up the slack. When they closed the shelter, you know, what are we supposed to do? I'm homeless. I have a van to sleep with. I'm very fortunate. But I tell you, the criminalization of homeless people is, we just can't have it. We can't have, we are not criminals. You know, some of us maybe chose to be there. Some of us really don't want to be homeless. If we could afford homes, we would. San Francisco is an expensive place to live, but it's not for choice for a lot of us. And we would work if people would want to hire us. It's just a little disheartening that human beings aren't seen as human beings.
We're
all.
And just a quick comment about this. Some of us don't want to be homeless. You know, this plays into the mythology that somehow homeless people want to be homeless, or those who, shall we say, prefer not to have stuck in extortion rents to landlords doing meaningless or oppressive work that they get paid half what they're worth for, are somehow subhuman beings or idle bums or idiots or problem persons. But the really good people are the puritanical people who are really also ready to pay the necessary extortion rents and jump on board whatever jobs they're offered so they can, you know, pay most of it to the landlord. I mean, and I'm not saying that that isn't a way of life one can choose, you know, and many people do, some out of necessity, some out of choice, or both. But the idea that somehow it's you're a suspicious character if you simply want to, let's say, sleep outside and you're not causing any problem, but you're going to get arrested for it, is bullshit, frankly. It's bigotry, and it's something that too many homeless people play into and too many homeless advocates support or try to defend themselves from. It's one of those kind of nasty myths that people feel they have to sort of jump on board and answer rather than essentially dismiss, which is what I like to do. I hope that's what I'm doing. So just thought I'd throw in my grumble there as we listen to Pal Val and what she has to say.
As you disappear into the distance.
That's right. Sweet reunion, sweet promises. No, I will. I have a bus pass. Yeah, I will. Yeah, I'll come back.
You don't have to. I'm just wondering if you
are. Yeah, I did. Well, if not in person, in spirit. And I do pray for my tribe, my siblings, my people that are in that are in the same thing, that aren't as fortunate as me.
And how long have you been in the Santa Cruz?
A year and a half. Wow. A year and a half. I'm back in Santa Cruz. I lived here for 5 years, about 20 years ago. So I'm back in Santa Cruz in a different financial bracket, so it's a bit different to be...
What was your previous bracket?
Oh, I had a pretty good paying job. I could be removed. I could be sheltered from such realities. And now I'm living on the underbelly, so I see the other side.
You're staring you straight in the face.
Yes, we're straight in the face. That's right, yeah. I've never had to deal with prejudice. And now I am. So it hurts. It hurts, but I'm not alone. That's the good part, the saving grace, is that I'm not alone. There's so many like me, and there's going to be a lot more. So I, you know, we're... and all we need, my answer, my solution, people really want to get rid of us the most. I think if people could just, like, some car rental, not car rental, I mean a car dealerships that they could just donate, tax write-offs, campers, motorhomes, and RVs with a tank of gas and with some money for gas, we will leave, because I have a place, you know, that we will leave by the droves. We'll caravan out of Santa Cruz and, you know, won't be the public nuisances or the unsightly. You know, we're not good for businesses, so we will leave. But we don't have the money. When you're
caravan of the unwanted.
The caravan of the unwanted, yes. We will leave. We might go stay in the Black Rock. In Nevada, you know, there's the Burning Man that goes on, but we, you know, there are places we could stay that won't ruin the businesses. I don't think we ruin businesses. I think when businesses are kind and they let us, yeah, there's some people that really make it bad, but put a bad taint.
If she doesn't think homeless people ruin businesses, why is she suggesting a caravan out of town? I mean, that's the Take Back Santa Cruz Downtown Business Association solution. Is to get rid of counterculture people in town, particularly poor counterculture people. I mean, see, again, this is the internalization of someone else's phony criticism in an attempt to somehow hold hands, sing kumbaya, make peace with those people. But there's some viewpoints, though you may make peace with the people, and there's nothing wrong with that. They are people. Don't make peace with the viewpoints. The viewpoints are vicious, sick, and false. You don't want to make peace with that kind of a viewpoint. That's my view.
Our reputation. But, you know, there's, for the most part, I mean, most of the people I know that I've interviewed, gotten to know that are homeless, fellow homeless people, are trying to do the best they can. They're making lemonade. They're trying to make lemonade. And we
so are you outdoors yourself?
Yes, most of the time, yeah.
You've been ticketed for being outdoors?
Close to it. I've been warned, so I've had to keep moving. I wandered around in the middle of the night, so I haven't been ticketed yet or arrested yet, but I might have that privilege yet someday.
And we've been talking with?
Val. I'm Val, your pal. Val. Belinda. My name is Belinda. Full name is Belinda.
This is like Val, Belinda, or Pal Val?
Pal Val.
Pal Val. Thank you, Pal Val.
Yes. Yeah. All gathered between ourselves from the SEO.
All right, well, let's take a quick update. So you just came from City Hall?
Yes, me and a few other guys are already over there getting ready, you know.
Waiting to receive the walkers? Or
waiting to receive everything we can get, and just, you know, figure it out.
What's your name, sir, if you wish to say?
Chris Turner.
And Chris, do you intend to be, should we say, passing the night in or around City Hall?
Yep. I'm down here right up against the building.
Is this your first, second, or third, or 15th time there?
This is my first time there.
Oh, really? So, you know, you may be risking a citation.
Oh, well, I've got seven of them in the last 6 weeks anyways. Seven citations. I sat by the town clock. Boom, citation. I looked in the garbage can for something to eat. You know, he said, "Chester was scavenging." He said, "I took bottles and cans out of it." Like, I didn't do that at all. I didn't take nothing out. I was there something to eat. You didn't take it for being hungry in this town, you know? Ridiculous.
You're here. Anything else that's happened recently you want to pass on?
I saw someone walking. My dog was stolen 4 months ago. I saw somebody walking here down Pacific. I said, "Baby girl, Cinnamon." She turned around. She ran to me. She jumped in my arms. She licked my face. She gave me kisses. It's my dog. There's a chip in her, and they're supposed to go send somebody from SPCA to the Riesel House to get the dog so they can scan the chip.
And then Cinnamon may be returning home.
Yes. I've been crying. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning crying about my dog. You know, my wife's in the state mental hospital right now. They told my man, my dog was taken. My wife was taken.
They're probably trying to steal your sleep as well.
And now, and getting them going mentally because they don't get enough sleep.
And again, we've been talking with
Chris Turner.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. You're a good man.
You too. We're talking with
Meredy Well.
And you have some questions, Meredy. You've been doing some singing, and you've been doing a lot of supporting of these protests. Your question, as I remember it, is, well, you've had a couple of campouts. You think you're hoping that the city, you asked me, hoping the city council is going to pay some attention to what's going on. Wasn't that your question?
Yes, that was my question.
My answer was, pretty much.
But isn't that why we're doing it?
No, as I said, why I'm doing it is to alert the community to what's going on.
Community.
Right, because I think the community will eventually take the actions that will force the city council to do something. I don't think the city council is going to do shit unless the community makes some strong moves.
What does the community need to do?
Well, show up in greater numbers, put more pressure down, start sleeping at different places in solidarity with the homeless, write lots of letters, I don't know, bang.
Other places?
And generally engage in civil disobedience with respect to laws that are abusive, such as the sleeping ban, such as the laws that criminalize people in terms of their right to be in public spaces during the day or at night. I would say mocking and disobeying agents of authority who attempt to enforce these laws. That is to say, police officers who, instead of doing their job, going after belatedly children who get murdered, or, you know, people who are assaulted or raped and don't get the response they need in the time they should, instead they're spending their time giving smoking tickets, being in a park after dark tickets. City resources are being spent to promulgate the private prejudices and enforce the private fears and business interests. I wouldn't even call them business interests, business paranoia, of the Downtown Association and other groups. So what the community needs to do, of course, is to start acting human in spite of the demands of the inhuman aspects of society that are put upon us. And that is not an easy thing to do. I'm not saying it's easy by any means. But it's something that is worth doing.
Well, in other causes, this work. I don't know about this particular cause. This is a difficult cause because homeless people are a small minority, although a sizable one, in Santa Cruz, as you know.
It's because they're a minority.
Yeah, and most important, they're a power.
Powerless
is not quite right, but, you know, they're in that kind of category.
Yes. You know. I see.
Indeed. And the clouds have cleared away now.
It does work, though. It's worked for other causes.
You can't guarantee this is going to work. A lot of this is a principled action led by people like Phil Posner, who
understand that it's morally wrong. And he's, and just like Louise was outraged that she couldn't be at City Hall with a petition at night. That's why she took a ticket last time. It was her second ticket. And the police told her, you kids, have a closed park. This isn't a park. This is City Hall. What are you talking about? It was closed. No, you can't close City Hall grounds at night. This is our center of government. So in other words, she was outraged at the fiction that was being laid out under the force of guns, badges, tasers. Again, the officers were very polite, very correct. They were very nice. And they gave her a $189 citation. Right. But they also, because of...
It's actually a $198 citation, we learned later in the evening.
Of her courage, they left. They could have given the rest of us citations, but they all backed off because I don't think they wanted to deal with the rest of us. See, other people who had fled to the sidewalk or moved to the sidewalk because they didn't want tickets,
right,
came back when they saw Louise, who was actually was supporting Max, the man from Monterey who came to help us.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he's part of the Monterey 8, you know, the ones who blocked the freeway.
Max, that's right.
You remember Max.
Yes, Max.
So you, on the other hand, you felt a little less involved with this case. I noticed, hey, man, how you doing?
Hi.
All right. You've backed away from this movement a bit, but you're here helping out.
Absolutely. So I really like cooking.
You can't stand meetings, right? Meetings make you a little...
Meetings. I don't like meetings.
You don't like to stand up and talk, make motions, pound your fist on the table.
Yeah, I've never really liked meetings. I'm not a meeting girl. I'm an action girl.
Well, I think action is where it's at, and I commend you for that. Any other thoughts on this?
I'm so glad that there's at least one group in this community that's willing to stand up for the rights of the poor and homeless, because I don't see anybody else doing it.
Oh, or at least lie down and go to sleep for the rights of the poor.
That's right. Lie down and go to sleep for the rights of the poor.
And we've been talking with
Merity Wells, and I hope you have a really good night's sleep tonight and the police just leave you alone.
Highly unlikely, but you can never tell.
I don't like to give up hope.
No, no. Never give up hope. Thank you. That was Musical Mike with a very brief harmonical number.
Where's your sleeping bag, Drew? Whip it out.
We have Drew of Project Pollinate, a perennial talker and sometime actor. What's happening, Drew?
Not much. My knee and back are killing me from yesterday today, but not much.
You're going to sleep in your vehicle tonight, then? Would that be what's happening?
No, I'm going to come down and support, but I don't think I'll be able to stay the evening. I have plans later this evening and this morning, or tomorrow morning, so.
Yeah, young romantic thing is going to take you away from all of this?
No, I wish, though. It's much more business-oriented, so it's okay, though. I'm in support and in complete solidarity with the movement and the issue, and anything that we at Project Pollinate could do to help to move forward and promote
other equality. Than sleep out and get tickets.
At another time, I would be down to come out and sleep out and potentially get a ticket. Not even if necessary, just for fun, to support and be a part of the movement. I just can't do it tonight, unfortunately.
Well, I hope your back feels better.
Thank you. I'm limping my knees. That's like horrible.
Be careful with your knees. And don't talk. Don't overtax them now.
I woke up this morning walking at a 45-degree angle. And I'm like walking around like this all morning. So I took a shower, and now I'm like just able to stand up. Which
we do have an additional shower here in case you want to dive in.
Thank you. I think I will wait and get some body work, and then hopefully it'll work out. Luckily, I have some great friends in the community that can offer low-cost body work. So.
Chiropractic on the cheap.
Muscle relax and reflexology kind of stuff.
And we've been talking with?
Drew from Project Pollinate. If you're ever interested in finding more resources or things around town, you can totally contact us.
Thank you, Drew.
Thanks, Robert.
All right.
And we do have a caller. Calling in again is Pat Colby, who is giving us an update on the Homeless Lack of Services Center situation regarding grants. Is that right, Pat?
No. My brother said that somebody had sent us a thread where an SDPD officer was giving out reports.
I'm having trouble hearing you, Pat. Sorry. Can you say that again?
That there was a SDPD officer giving out crime reports, information that was usually not let out except to the victim.
Oh, right. You're talking about the issue of Ken D giving out information that was assisting people banging on vans and harassing homeless people at night. Is that?
Yeah. Well, what they were giving out is the people that are banging on vans, on RVs, you know, thinking every RV or van or person sleeping in their car is a meth dealer. And they were feeling like the police weren't listening to all their calls when they call in a suspicious person. That's what they do to get the police. And so he posted a whole bunch of reports and with their details right on the thread and take that to Santa Cruz. So they're getting information the public has no access to.
Right.
That they shouldn't have access to.
Yeah, that's another issue.
And it's all about RVs.
Yeah, Pat, those are two different things. Information the public doesn't have access to is one thing. Information the public shouldn't have access to is another. Unfortunately, police officers can actually release a lot of information that we don't have access to, but that they're not forbidden from releasing.
Yeah, but are they allowed to give the actual report right on to a group?
I don't know of anything. I don't know of anything banning them from doing it. But
you asked what the topic was, and it was all about RVs.
Right. That wasn't my issue. My issue was whether, you know, this is somehow something that is forbidden, and we can take Ken Deeg to the prosecutor and blah 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 blah. And I don't think that's the case. But I don't know, and so I'm still waiting to get more information on that. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, but John had said you wanted to know what the reports were surrounding, and it was all about RVs.
Oh, excellent. Well, I think that's good.
Now, the RVs are being stalked by Take That Santa Cruz.
Right, and where can people find these reports if they want to verify this?
They have to be in the Take Back Santa Cruz group. That's the only...
So join Take Back Santa Cruz and learn more about the vehicles.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's because he's not putting it out to everyone. He's just putting it out to a select...
Okay. Well, I appreciate that update and that piece of information, Pat. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, thanks again.
Bye.
Rabbi. And we're nearing the end of the show. Let's see if there's any more of this last bit of... It's actually kind of pre-March to City Hall that we did on Sunday, and we're going to be doing again this Sunday. Because Uncle Dennis is due to arrive in the studio, or maybe we're going to be putting on a little something from Uncle Dennis.
He might be away.
I'm not sure if he's going to be away or not. Let's hear a bit of an interview, and then we will go out into the distance and possibly see you at the Food Not Bombs meal. Either I don't know if I'll be there on Saturday or Sunday. I may look in 4 to 6 at the pest office. Or definitely at the sleep out. I'm due to show up bathrobe in hand with my mega teddy bear this time. And who knows, maybe we can put a mattress on a vehicle and do some snoozing as we proceed. After all, you are allowed to sleep during the day legally. Anyway, let's hear another interview, and then we'll fade into the moon set or the moonrise.
Perhaps, talking with Xavier.
Xavier, you're a man in an RV.
Yes, I am.
You say that you've been approached by the police knocking on your van how many times?
Three times.
And what were the circumstances?
The first time it was at 12 p.m. and my RV was parked for maybe less than 2 days.
12 p.m. midnight or 12 p.m. noon?
At night.
Okay.
At night. And they told me, they came with flashy lights and all around. It was my first time, because they've been living in an RV for 1 month. And so I was a little, like, scared about that. It was
how many cops?
Two. So I came out of the RV and I started just talking with them. And so they told me, basically they told me that they have a complaint from some neighborhood, and they have to show up there. I told them that I asked here in downtown 2 days ago to the officers if it was allowed or not staying in RV, and that officer, he told me that it was allowed to stay for 3 days.